You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins, my co-host, and our semi-regular co-host, Daniel M., a member of our team here at Lifeway. And we will be talking today, asking 5 leadership questions about how to interview job candidates well. So this is for the person doing the interviewing, not the one being interviewed. Todd, have you ever done a job interview before?
What kind of question is that?
Wow. That's not our first question. I just want to validate his credentials.
So many interviews, some of which are very painful. So it's very apparent when, especially if you're being called into an interview that somebody who works for you has a position that they're hiring, and you want to, you know, be in on the interview or check out the candidate. One of the best things that you can do for your boss is to make sure that anyone he interviews with is interview worthy.
Well, yes, you did a good job of making sure that and preparing me that when I came in to interview at Lifeway, you said, now you will be meeting with Eric Geiger, and this is what you can expect, and this is the kind of questions he will ask. And you didn't give me any answers and say this, but just you made sure that I knew what was coming, and I'm pretty sure that you knew going in that I wouldn't embarrass myself. I don't think I embarrassed myself. Yes, you.
That's right. That's part of leading up.
And Daniel, your history of job interviews, have you interviewed and hired many people?
Not as many as Todd. I am younger than him.
Being the old man. Being the old man is tough.
Right. But I have done multiple, so.
All right. And I have interviewed a few people, again, probably not as many as these guys, just due to various roles, but I've been interviewed a few times and I know what questions interviewers asked that I thought were really dumb. So that's going to be my contribution.
This is not an official question, but what's the dumbest question you think you may have ever gotten? Was it one of the, like, if you were a waterfall, what type of waterfall would you be?
You know, I've never
reviewed your questions, Todd.
That's not my question.
That's right. What if you were a color, which if you could describe yourself in shades of color? No, honestly, I think the dumbest question is the one that most interviewers ask, and it's, why do you want this job? I think that's a dumb question because it's one that people being interviewed will always try to give the answer they expect the other person to hear.
Absolutely.
When in reality, what they really want is a paycheck, but nobody is going to say that. And it might not be the primary reason. But so you always get these peripheral reasons that are overplayed. I just love the company culture, which I just read about on the internet for 7 minutes before walking
not
in.
Not everyone
here.
Does that, though.
Oh,
what? Some people.
It's shocking.
You mean not everybody reads this?
They don't even prep.
Yes.
Well, that's a separate podcast. Okay. How to be interviewed well. We'll do that one another time. So let's jump into our 5 questions. And so we're going to start broad. And that is, what is the aim of a job interview? What are you hoping to discover? So there's, you know, you've got Google, you can search, you can dig into people's social media, you can do background checks, you can do all this stuff. So the job interview piece.
So not the whole process of interviewing.
No,
you're talking about the interview.
The interview itself.
Okay. Yeah.
If so you have not face-to-face uncovered with them. Uncovered and weeded out a significant amount of people in your initial search, then something's wrong because inevitably, and I don't know how we get it through people's heads that you really need to clean up your social media before you hire or before you apply for any position.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Because that's the first thing people are going to hit. And I know it,
for most people, that's the first thing that shows up on a Google search.
It is. Because
unless you have your own website, unless you have something else, if you search somebody, it's going to be their Twitter feed, their Facebook feed, their Instagram feed, whatever it is.
Yeah. And I'm going to go to LinkedIn and I'm going to look for any connection that you and I have, and I'm going to call that person. And hopefully they haven't just accepted their friend request or whatever it is you do on LinkedIn. Hopefully they actually know the person. So I don't care if it's a reference or not. I'm going to find out. Now, again, what I was about to say about social and about that is technically that's probably not in line with HR policy. What? In some organizations, at least.
Well, if it's public information on the internet, I mean, if you're not interviewing them, it's not outside HR policy. So if you're about to interview them.
Yeah, I can search for anything about anybody.
Yeah,
I guess.
You can Google anything. So you do that before the interview. So in the interview, what are you hoping to get out of it?
In the interview, I'm hoping to get out of it any inferences I've already made. So I may look at someone's resume. A perfect example would be we are currently looking at fall interns, like right now. As we speak, I just did this morning, went through over a dozen applications that came in and their resume. So I looked at a person's resume and the resume looked great. They had all the right schools. The resume looked great. It was clean. They spelled everything correctly. I tossed out two because they didn't even, I mean, it wasn't one spelling error. When you get to like five, you're saying you haven't even used spell check.
Yeah, especially in your first foot forward.
Oh my goodness. So those are tossed aside. So now the second thing I did was I said, oh, you are a graphic designer, so you're going to have some pages. Looked at those pages. So that's tossed aside. So by the time you make it to an interview with me, what I'm hoping to discover is if indeed what I have seen in all the pre-check things, if that's who you really are. So you may have a great resume. You may have all the right stuff on it. Mm-hmm. But what I'm now looking for is, what is your fit? If I ask you a really difficult question, how do you do that? How do you respond to that? I was going to say something, but I see it's in the second question, so I can't do that.
That's great. I'm so glad you read ahead. Daniel, anything specific you look for in an interview?
Yeah. So, I mean, by the time we get to the interview, you know, obviously I would feel like they might have the competencies, because mm-hmm. that's really what you're looking at in the, you know, their experience and all that in their resume and such. But by the time I get to the interview, I have three filters that I'm specifically looking through, and that affects the questions that I ask. So, for example, integrity is the first filter that I'm looking at, right? So I'm looking at, have they made mistakes? Can they admit it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And can they share the mistakes that they've made and what they've learned from it? So things like that. I also look for intelligence, things that they've recently learned. So I'm not necessarily looking at, okay, what are they learning or what have they learned, but what are they still learning today? Maturity is another one of those filters in terms of, can they handle stress? Have they been able to celebrate past successes as well? The second filter that I look through is I look at their energy level and the amount, not necessarily charisma, because there can be introverts who don't have that, but how much energy do they bring to life, to their job? Can they actually energize others,
right?
Are they able to motivate someone else is another one. Edge, you know, do they have that edge? Are they able to execute? What are the things they're passionate about? So those are really the first two filters, the and that affects the questions that I ask.
I will say, you know, going back, and you guys both know this because you've both interviewed with me, like learning is extremely, mm-hmm. extremely important. If somebody doesn't have a learning posture, I really can't have them on my team because they have a short shelf life. The other piece there that I wanted to go back and mention on what Daniel said, what you prompted in me to, was that I'm going to do an individual interview, and then I'm also going to have you interview with other people.
Yeah.
Especially in my case, I'm a man. So at least one of those extra people needs to be a woman, because I want to see, you know, if you're a woman, how you interact with other women. If you're a man, how you interact with a woman, all of that. But also just to see that interaction. So in a group setting, I'm gonna lay back a little bit and let them ask the questions. Yeah. Now choose those people wisely.
Specific to the role, for example.
Specific to the role. And then also there's just some good people in an interview. I mean, in an interview situation, Faith Whatley here at Lifeway is over a significant chunk of our ministry. But, you know, she has a really good discerning heart, and she's got the ability to ask really good questions that I would never ask, but I'm glad I'm in the room when she asks them.
Yeah. I think something, and this is one of those sort of subtle unspoken is just, how do you come across? Are you likable? Now it's, yeah. You can work with people you don't like, but if you are hiring somebody to join, especially to join a team, you would really like to bring on somebody who you look at and go, I think I'll enjoy working with this person, and not necessarily be best friends. You're not sitting there looking at common interests, but just, how do you carry yourself? How do you come across in an interview? Are you personable? Are you just the basic likable things? And again, Daniel, you mentioned charisma. Not everybody is going to be real gregarious and outgoing, but you can be quiet and even shy and extraordinarily likable.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
So just that, even just that vibe of, will I enjoy being on the same team with you?
What's the fit piece, right? I mean, not only is it the fit with the vision and values of the organization, not only is the fit with the role, mm-hmm. but it's also the fit with the individual team.
Right. I mean, I know that when you interviewed me and had me come in, I met with a couple different members of the team that were already there, talked to them on the phone if they couldn't make it, had lunch with the team. So again, getting that outside perspective, saying, I'm not the sole decision maker here. You will be working with all these people. I need all of their input. And I'm sure there was conversations after I left of, hey, what did you think? How's this going
to
work?
I mean, the beauty of that is you're actually giving greater ownership to the team, mm-hmm. right? And allowing them to feel like they're a part of the process as well, yeah. even though they may not be managing. I mean, it does really empower the team yeah. to bring them in.
Well, and this is a good place to transition to the second question, because once we start talking about who you interview with and things like that, you've moved into the interview process. So I'm just going to put this out there. Whoever wants to can go first. Actually, let's have Todd go first, because he already started answering this one earlier and then stopped himself. So what is the interview process you prefer?
I want to talk to you on the phone first, of course, before I bring you in. I'm only going to bring in three usually. And I just think that's a good rule. If you don't have three quality candidates, then you're not looking hard enough. But once you have three that you're really, I had over 330 some people apply for Daniel's role. I had 200 and some apply for your role.
Nice.
There you go.
You win, Daniel. You beat out more candidates than I did.
We win.
That's right.
Well, church planters are maybe a little more, maybe they hustle a little,
that's right.
little extra.
I don't know,
on the
man.
Side.
Marketers love to put themselves out there though. So yeah,
there you go. Yeah. Well, but the point being, it was, and I got, you know, accused of dragging my feet a time or two, but now I think I would say our team is quite envied by other areas in the organization, because we're not a huge team, but we have some really, really quality people. And that wasn't, I don't think that wasn't by accident. And, you know, we made sure that we fit really well. The only way to do that is really in person and to involve the rest of the team in the process. Mm-hmm.
So you said you start on the phone and
start
then
on the phone,
you know, and you sort of vet the candidates down. You shoot for three candidates. If you have less than that, you haven't looked hard enough.
Yep.
More than that is not necessarily a bad thing, I would assume.
More than that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I'm going to weed down to three before I get to that
point.
Yeah, I
mean, you're going to bring in your top three.
Absolutely. And I may give somebody, you know, assessment, evaluation. A lot of times I may not do that until I have already interviewed them, mm-hmm. because I don't want it to change my opinion. I just want it to inform my opinion.
Right.
But in order to weed down from like seven, if I'm really interested in seven, then I will sometimes give, hey, here's, I'm going to give everybody the Myers-Briggs, the StrengthsFinder and emotional intelligence. We talked about this, by the way, in a previous podcast. Mm-hmm. So if this piques your interest, go back and look for that one.
Yeah, it would have been late July, early August we released that one.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, even with bringing three in, the further you go in with the interview process, the more candidates you have,
right.
the more time it's going to take, right? So, I mean, for example, I don't actually use the phone. I would always prefer going with like a Skype or a FaceTime interview.
That's
because
true.
Because there's just something about looking at them, seeing how they dress. So I would never, I mean, even if someone's local, I'd rather just do a Skype or FaceTime because I don't want them to come in unless, right. you know, it's worth it. Right. So, I mean, I'll do that. But then what I do is when I schedule the actual in-person interview, which would be the third one for me, I just say, OK, this time, this day, and I see what happens.
So is this like Abercrombie's lookbook?
No, it's not how they look. It's how they, you know, body language. Body language, right?
I was a brand rep back in the day. I'm just saying.
Daniel uses Tinder to determine. No, come on.
Right. But basically what I do with the actual in-person interview, when I get them to come in, it's a little bit strategic. I'll give them a date and time, and then I'll see what they do. If they really, my experience is if they really want the job, they'll reschedule their day to make that time. Mm-hmm. If they respond back and say, well, actually, no, that doesn't work. What about this time or this time or this time? Then, I mean, it just shows me their level of desire for the job.
Unless they have a really good excuse.
Yeah, unless they have a really good excuse. Yeah. But.
So then let's move on to the next question, which is, what's your follow-up process after an interview? Let's break this into two parts. If you like the candidate, so you want to take next steps. And if you don't like the candidate, so the interview confirmed this is not a great person for this job, what do you do post interview? And let me give you a scenario. I have never had a job interview where I was interviewed where they just said, thanks for coming in, you're not a good fit for the job, and I left. I have interviewed and then gotten notice like the next day, which to me felt like they were being cowards. Like, you knew this yesterday because you emailed me today and told me. Yeah. Why didn't you just tell me there? So, in fact, why didn't you just cut the interview short and go, hey.
Barnabas, they had to pray about it.
This wasn't a Christian organization.
What excuse do they use then? What did they do? I prayed about it and you're not the right
guy. God told me. I just didn't understand it because I'm like, if you knew at that time,
yes.
why couldn't you tell me at the time?
So what I usually do is when the in-face interview is over, mm-hmm. I'll actually tell them how many other candidates that are at this stage. Mm-hmm. So then in that way, they know, because when I was in their position, I wanted to know, okay, how far along are we? Pardon mm-hmm. me? Yeah, so you say, okay, hey, thank you for coming. This is how many people are in the process.
Right.
And this is when we'll end the last interview in this stage. So expect to hear back from us then.
And so you'd give them a time frame.
Yeah.
Did you follow your own time frame? Because I've had that happen too, where I'd interview and they go, oh, we'll get back to you in a couple of weeks. And like 5 weeks later, heard back.
That drives me nuts.
That's bad form.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Whoever. So I'll get back to them either or. If a meeting got postponed or we weren't able to do it, I'll follow back and say, hey, you know, we haven't had a decision yet. So I'm usually quick to communicate.
So you bring in a candidate, they blow you away, they're phenomenal, but they're the first out of three candidates you're interviewing. Do you ever just cancel interviews with the other two and say, I'm hiring this one? Or do you go through all three and just keep in mind how good the first candidate was?
Yeah. I mean, I find sometimes even though I felt like the candidate was a good one, the first one, mm-hmm. It's kind of hard to make that judgment after you meet the other two. Because the other two, you know, because the first one, you may think that they're really good because maybe you've been without someone for 5 months.
Right.
Right. And you're just excited that finally someone with a pulse wants that job. But you need to compare.
Well, I'll tell you what's really difficult is when you bring in a candidate, you interview them, you do the group interview with the team, or you do the group interview with other people in your organization, and they don't see it, or they would pick a different candidate.
Right.
And you disagree. And you know in your gut that this is the person. That is difficult.
And that happens fairly often if human resources does an interview.
Yes.
And you do an interview. Because human resources is looking for the safest possible candidate. And this is not a shot at our human resources department, but I have seen this at multiple organizations. Yeah. Human resources wants the safest candidate. They have a profile in mind, but they don't do the work you do and they don't work on your team. So when you say, I want to hire this person, they may go, we're not sure they're the best fit for the job. That happened to me as well, where the guy who hired me was told by HR that I was not a safe fit for the job. And he hired me anyway because he wanted somebody who wasn't a safe fit for the job.
Yeah.
But they couldn't have known that. He wanted somebody who would make some, you know, rattle some cages, essentially.
Yeah.
So that's always an interesting one when you get that feedback. So let's say that happens where you get that feedback from the team or maybe just the outside people you brought in. So fellow directors, things like that who have vetted a candidate and they say, we're not sure that's the right person, but you're pretty excited about them. How do you balance that?
Well, One of the ways that I balance that is the great thing is they've met with me, they've met with a group of people. So in our instance here with you guys, we met with multiple groups of people. So in that situation, you know, you've got one group that, as long as two groups agree, there's not really a problem. It's when it's you against
everyone,
the world. You asked me for my opinion. I'm telling you my opinion.
Right.
And part of that is just doing a good job of setting that up front, that ultimately I value your opinion. And that's why I want you to take a look at this candidate. But
it's my call.
But it's my call.
Right.
And the other thing is I usually circle back around with those people individually versus as a group. Mm-hmm. So I can control it a little more.
Yeah. No, that makes sense.
Sorry. That's just how I roll.
So fourth question, what are some mistakes you regularly see interviewers make? And so this could be awful interview questions. This could be screwing up the process. This could be anything that you've seen that has led to just an awful hire or losing out on a candidate that should have been hired.
You know, candor and humility are such an important, qualities that I think also that really link into self-awareness as well. So, I mean, when someone comes in for a job, you know, you want them to be confident, you want them to be learned, you want to see that they can do the job. But I don't want to hire someone that's full of themselves.
Right.
Or, you know, so the question, and this goes back to your, I think, opening question about, you know, what's kind of the worst question. It's, yes. Okay, what are your weaknesses?
Oh, I was going to bring that one up.
My weaknesses are, you know,
I work too hard. I care too much. And, yes.
Yeah. And I mean, so that's why, you know, when I will always ask, tell me about something you failed at, mm-hmm. or something that you've done wrong. And if they can't come up with a story that was recent, you know, not when they were like grade two, then it actually shows me that there's either a lack of self-awareness, they're too full of themselves, or they have, you know, they don't know how to process that.
Yeah, it's like they're not learning from their mistakes their mistakes are sort of hidden away somewhere.
Yeah, and if they're not able to share something like that in an interview, when the person interviewing you is asking you that question, then it's like, well, okay, what are you hiding?
Yeah.
Are you really being truthful?
Surely you, I mean, if you haven't had conflict as an example in the last year, either somebody had conflict with you or you had conflict with each other, even if that person had no reason to have conflict with you. It's, you know, how did you handle that situation? If you can't answer simple stuff like that, or tell me about a time you failed, what's the biggest fail you've ever had? You know, different things like that. If they're not honest about that, then you don't want them around.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is if you ask them their failure and you need to pay attention to see, are they going to make it more about someone else failing and that's why they failed? Right. Or is it going to be more about them? Right. And I think the other thing is.
Yeah. But if you know they're Myers-Briggs, then you can tell whether or not they're. I mean, some profiles have more of a tendency to make excuses and shift the blame than others.
And the other thing is, you know, the other thing about that question is just the whole idea of emotional intelligence, mm-hmm. right? So how much of the failure are they going to share?
Right.
Right. Are they going to spill everything? And, you know, it's like TMI, right? Like I didn't ask that much detail.
Right? Not your accountability partner, bud.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So it's neat because that kind of question hits at the candidate in a lot of different ways.
I would say the number one mistake that interviewers make is they do not call references.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you don't call the references, don't bring them to me, because the situation I mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. where someone has brought me a candidate, I go through the interview with them and they're like, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, well, what did their references say?
I don't know.
And there's silence.
But then you have to call, when you call the references, you need to ask the references
for
who
references.
Other references are, right? Because the first references are always going to be good, and you can't necessarily slander someone, when you're a reference. But if you call the other references, they're not official references.
Might know this well.
I think one mistake that interviewers make is asking questions that are far too open-ended.
Yes.
Instead of, so for example, Daniel, you gave the question, you know, what is one mistake? That is a closed-ended question. You're asking for something specific, an example. Whereas if you say, what are some mistakes, or tell me about a time that, like, there's just, you kind of open things up and people can kind of ramble. Or, so this was a question I got asked in an interview. How do you handle conflict? Well, I don't know. Is it conflict with my wife? Is it conflict with my boss? Is it conflict with somebody I'm managing? Is it conflict with the idiot next to me who cut me off on the road? Like, conflict with who and in what context? Because there's a spectrum of appropriate responses to conflict.
Yeah, you never want to ask the question. You always have to ask kind of a little bit of sleight of hand.
Right.
Right.
Or give a scenario that could likely happen tomorrow in this office. Mm-hmm. So if somebody drops the ball on a project you're working with them on and they, you know, they handle it this way, how do you tend to respond to that? That's a scenario.
Everybody's been on a team with somebody, whether it's a project in college or something, where they've been on a team with someone who didn't carry their weight.
Yeah.
So that is a good example of a question of, have you ever been on a team mm-hmm. where somebody wasn't carrying their weight? And the answer is going to be yes. How did you respond to that?
Yeah. How did you feel about that? How did you respond to that?
You know, I feel like at the beginning of the podcast, we had said this is one for, you know, if you are interviewing someone else. Uh-huh. But the further we get into this, I almost feel like this is going to be good if you are going to be interviewed, because when I came to interview here, for example, in every job I've interviewed for, I've always had questions mm-hmm. that I was, in a sense, interviewing. So the list of questions that I had for Todd, for example, you know, I wanted to really figure out, was this going to be a good culture fit for me? So I didn't say, hey, can you describe the culture here on the leadership team?
You said, how do people do this?
Yeah. Or, you know, who are the people who get celebrated? Or tell me about who's a star, you know, in the last year, and what did they do? Right. And asking questions like that it allows you to get the answer.
And it would be a mistake for the interviewer if they didn't reply with the same candor they expected. So absolutely, if the person being interviewed asks a good question, you have a responsibility to be honest and forthright with them. So both positively and negatively, I hate it when interviewers give like culture spin, you know, where they don't just say, oh, that's a weakness of ours. You asked about celebrating people. That's something we're focusing on. We're working on. We haven't been very good at it. Mm-hmm. Now you might scare a candidate away that way, but the alternative is lying or misleading. And that happens fairly often, especially I think in the secular corporate world, especially, but I think it happens in the church world too, because people are drinking the Kool-Aid and they just sort of spit that culture stuff out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, or they'll give you aspirational values versus actual values or aspirational culture versus the actual culture,
which, That's part of the reason why, Todd, when you have a candidate interview with members of the team is so beneficial, because the aspirational values never make it down to the non-director level. Nobody buys that stuff. And so it allows the person being interviewed to ask questions and get some answers from people who are just doing the day-to-day work and can tell you, what is the value here Monday through Friday during the work hours? Like, how does this look? So that is a valuable thing for allowing the honesty to go two ways. All right, last question, you may have some great examples of this. It may only be one each. What is your favorite unexpected interview question? So the question that you tag on at the end or you drop in the middle that takes a hard left turn. So the person being interviewed is sort of shaken out of their, like, I'm locked in, I'm dressed for success, I'm here to kill this thing. And all of a sudden you ask a question about ready, go.
I mean, when I was interviewed at my previous church, I remember being asked this question, and I've stolen it since. It was, what were you like in grade 5?
Interesting. So it was just... For Americans, that's fifth grade.
Oh, okay. Yeah, fifth grade or, you know, rising grade 4, whatever you guys say here. Anyways. But yeah, when I was asked that question, what were you like in grade 5? It was just... It totally shifted the game for me. Like, you had to be personal. Yeah. You know, there's nothing canned, you could say. So, I mean, that was a very
And you think part. That was their purpose, was just to kind of get some of your personality, some of your storytelling, just some of, like, who's behind the well-presented person?
Yeah, because oftentimes who you are in grade 5, it's, you're still kind of that person. You just have learned a lot, right?
those are the questions that we made fun of in the beginning. Like, if you were a shoe,
what type of shoe would you be and why?
That's because that there are good versions of these questions and bad versions of these questions. Yeah. Like,
well, all of them are meant to just, it's shocking you. And are you going to think, are they going to make a face like, this is stupid? Or are they going to
wait, you ask people what kind of a shoe you would be?
I have before.
Really?
Yeah. This is when I was a camp director.
I'm making the this is stupid face right now, I know. Listeners.
I was a camp director. What do you want me to do? So I was hiring college. I was a college student hiring other college students.
Well, I think good questions for interviewers are questions that they're personal questions, but they're like personal hobby questions. Like, yeah. I worked in publishing for several years, and I always like to ask people, what are you reading right now?
That's good.
Because if they came back and said nothing, well, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong business. We do books. That means we love books. If you're not reading something right now, you better have just finished yesterday, that kind of thing. And so, but it's also, that's also a little bit of a window into what do they enjoy? What are they interested in? How curious are they? Things like that. The same could be said, though, of like, what TV shows do you enjoy? What movies do you like? Those kinds of questions, because again, it brings it down. Like it takes the pressure off to have just the right answer, and they can go, oh, I love, you know, Breaking Bad.
I think in either instance, what you're looking to do is take down the wall, whether that is an abrupt punch to the gut or whether that is
utter nonsense,
slow asking them about things they like or asking them about their family or just getting them to unwind a little bit. And that's why it's important, you know, Daniel mentioned like Skype before. When people start to unwind a little bit, you can usually see their tells a little bit more from a nonverbal standpoint. And then it sounds horrible, but then you can go, okay, this is this person's tell, or this is this person's tick. Yeah. This is what they're going to do. You know, I don't know. A lot of that.
When they're uncomfortable.
Actually, some of that stuff takes a little while to get to know. Yeah. But then you can look around our team, like we can look around our team now and know how different people are going to respond to different things.
Yeah, you can predict it before they walk into the meeting.
Yes, yeah. You can even predict what they're going to say before they walk into the meeting.
Yeah, sometimes verbatim. That happens regularly. All right, folks. Well, that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. We hope that it helps you be a better interviewer and we hope it helps you find the best candidates for whatever team you lead. If you would take a moment, jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. I know I ask that every time, but that's because it matters in iTunes to help us maintain a ranking so people can find us. That's
very much so. You know, we love social media. We love the interwebs and technology. And one of the things that I personally love more than anything is seeing how things work. So we know from an algorithm standpoint, it's very important to leave ratings and reviews.
Right. That bumps us up the rankings in iTunes so people can discover. So if you think we're worth listening to, please go tell others that. That would really help us out. Thanks so much for listening and tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.